Last week we talked about creativity. We finished that topic. I hope you found it interesting. We know a lot about it, but not everything, of course. So I gave you a few pieces of advice that may help you with becoming more creative. We have only two meetings left today and next week. And we are a little bit behind from the point of view of my plan. I decided to leave out job search, looking for a position, for a job. For most of you, it's still kind of far ahead, far into the future. There are a few things that are useful for finding a position, academic position, anywhere in the world, but I think it's more important for you in the immediate future, now and in the immediate future, to look at the problem of time management and really important things like dealing with stress, I would say, because you have a lot of work, and there is no doubt that you need to do something about it if you want to avoid getting crazy. And that's a problem that touches many academics. We have a lot of work, and we need to deal with limited amount of time and also with stress. So this is the topic of today's meeting. Next week, I'm planning to talk about other really important things that have to do with ethics, but not what you think it is. Like, you know, not going through different things and telling you what you should do. Hopefully you will like it next week, our last meeting. In any case, time management, it's really two of the things that are on my initial list, is balancing your life. Limited time and having important things, and really important things. Important things may be your career, and really important things are your family, your friendships, generally your life, and you need to find a balance between that and your work, your careers, and coping with stress, which is unavoidable given the circumstances, of course, the limited amount of time. So here is the outline, how to use your time best. There is a talk that Robert pointed out to me by Randy Pausch. You can find it on YouTube. It's a good talk on the topic of time management. I watched it, and I was very pleased to see that probably 80% of the things that he talks about, I also talk about in my presentation. The other things, you know, if he and I sat down and talked about it, probably both of us would include the differences in each other's talks. Time management. So the first thing is you need to have a calendar, because some people don't have a calendar and they are managing, but I think the more things you have on your plate, the more you need a calendar. Just out of curiosity, who of you does not use a calendar with appointments and things to do? You don't. I really admire you, and I don't mean it as a, you know, as an irony. I admire you because I probably couldn't do that. And I was always a very serious boy, young man, student. When I moved to the Netherlands, at that time I was 24. I noticed how organized the people are in the Netherlands. They are keeping their appointments and you know, just generally very organized. I tell you a story, an anecdote that I faced. I was living there. My wife was abroad. She was working in the tropics for a few months. And then her friend called me and said, would you like to have dinner at my place? It was in a different town. I said, sure. So we made an appointment for dinner, which was a month in advance. It was like, you know, April, and then the appointment was for May. I was very organized. In fact, I had a calendar myself, so I put it down. And I was, when we talked initially, he said, okay, what time will you come?
My first reaction was, boy, it's a month in advance. How do I know what time I will come? But he said, he checked the schedule of the trains, and he said, there are two trains coming from your place, because I said I would come after work, from Zoetermeer to Horkun. And he said, one comes at 5:23 and the other one at 5:53. Which one will you take? So I said, okay, 5:23. Okay, I will wait for you at the railway station. It was a time, 1980s, there was no Google Maps. I would have to buy a map of the city to find him. So it was very convenient that he picked me up from the station. Time flies. The date of the appointment comes. I decided not to call, not to confirm, do nothing. Just get on the train and go there. Just to give him a lesson. I get off the train in the destination, and he's waiting for me at the station. I was completely devastated, you know. I thought, well, in Poland at that time, I would forget about the appointment, he wouldn't be there, and the train would be late. So that is an anecdote that I can tell you about the organization of life that I was facing there. There is a joke, when you miss an appointment or you are late, Germans usually are angry with you. They will tell you, you know, you are disrupting our work and this and that. The Dutch will be, they will not like it, but they will be nicer about this. They will tell you, well, it happens in the best families that you forget. Or if you forget about an appointment, they will ask you, when is your birthday? The second question, you know, when is your birthday? You will get a calendar from me for your birthday, you know, essentially reminding you that you need to be organized. Sometimes I thought that this level of organization was because of the general, very economic outlook of many Dutch. Phone calls are expensive, so you call and you try to make, you know, all the arrangements, hang up and not call again because it's extra cost. Which I think there's something to it. In any case, you make an appointment, you keep it. That's a general way that you are facing. Of course, there are two types of Dutch people. You know, there would be Dutch people also who are late or who forget. But in general, I heard they're like fish in the water. You know, I was quite serious. I was often angry at my colleagues in Poland when I was a young man. I would make an appointment, they would not show up, they would be late. There, I felt so nice. You know, everybody was keeping the appointments. Amazing. So the first thing that I would advise you, I would advise you, but you know, if you can keep it that way, good for you. You are probably exercising your memory. I couldn't handle it. This is not my calendar. I just got a screenshot from somewhere. But when you are working, when you are trying to do a lot of things, this is the way your calendar will look like. So it's very difficult to remember things, and I definitely advise you to have it and look at it. A nice thing is that Outlook synchronizes very nicely with smartphones, with my laptop, with my desktop. So when I make a change, it gets through to every thing, and I can just look at my calendar on my desktop. If I forget something, I can look here. Very, very nice. I could not easily live without that. So try to have something like this, and that will make you more organized. The second thing is look at your calendar, because whenever I forget about an appointment, it's because I did not look at my calendar the night before. So what I have a habit of looking before I go to bed, before I leave my computer, I look at things I have to do the next day. And then I remember, of course, for the next day, and I know what time to wake up and where to go, how to organize. When you put things in your calendar, take into consideration the travel time, if you need to go anywhere. Make sure that your appointments are reasonably scheduled. Because it's a little disorganized to call the day before and say, well, I want to change it a little bit. You are mixing up the schedule of other people. Just think about it. When you put it in the calendar, it's there. Holy.
So that's the first thing. The second thing is a calendar is not enough, because there's this quote from Henry David Thoreau. It's not enough to be busy, because so are the ants. You have to know your priorities. What are you busy about? You have to have priorities. And another quote from Goethe, things that matter the most must never be at the mercy of things that matter least. So always have the priorities, and things that are less important, you know, don't schedule them, put them away, refuse. Make sure that you are busy with important things that are important for you. Not only for you, there are things that are important for your good friends, for your family. They are also very important, but make sure that that you are doing the important things, not the less important. As I told you before, I'm usually very, very curious of things. So one day the university, there were free workshops for people, for faculty employees. There was a workshop about time management. I said, wow, I will improve my time management, so I'm going there. I went to the workshop, and a lot of it, the workshop was like a couple of hours. A lot of it was you know, interesting, but I was doing that already. But there was one thing I learned, and I definitely want to share it with you. This is from a book by Stephen Covey. Stephen Covey was a guy who wrote a few self-help books about being effective in the family, personal life, and business, all kind of self-help things. In a book, Seven Habits of Highly Effective People, he drew the following simple table. He divided the things that we do into along two dimensions. The first dimension is how important things are. So there are things important and less important. And then the second dimension is urgency, are things that are urgent and less urgent. Urgent things that are important is there is fire. Like, you know, there is a fire now, alarm. No matter what you do, you'd better get out of the building, right? You don't want to die here. That's urgent. That's also important. That's the first category. Crying baby, fire, some phone calls, your boss is calling, your advisor is calling you. You cannot afford to say, okay, I'm not picking up, right? You just take the call. Important that are not urgent are exercise, vocation, planning. They are never urgent. You don't need to exercise today. You can exercise tomorrow. So they are not urgent, but they are important. If you don't exercise, over time your health will deteriorate. You will die earlier. So this is important, but not that urgent. Vocation, so, you know, things that you plan to do in the long run, your calling, what you want to do, planning your life, planning your career is also important, but it's not urgent. If you don't plan it today, you plan it tomorrow, or you will not plan it at all. Your personal relationships, your spouse, your children, this is also important. Your parents, important, typically not urgent, unless your mother calls you and says, well, I have fallen and broken my leg. Well, then it's urgent and important. Not important, that is urgent, are interruptions, distractions. Somebody's calling me, right? I decide to pick up. I don't know who it is, but I'm picking it up. It's urgent because they are calling now, but it's not probably not important. Other distractions, somebody, a colleague in your office is saying something to you. Probably it's not important, but it's urgent. The colleague is saying it now. And then the fourth category, not urgent and not important, these are the things like internet browsing, going through Facebook, LinkedIn, reading emails that are, you know, not terribly important, etc. And then Covey says, if you want to manage your time effectively, you want to be all the time in this region. In this thing, you want to do important things that are not urgent. Important before you fix them, before they become urgent. If you are in this quadrangle all the time, then you will never be in here because you will fix problems before they appear. Occasionally there will be fire, of course, but not that often. And you never want to be there. So immediately you win a lot of time if you reduce the wasteful things that are not needed. You may not believe it, but I have lived without a TV for over 50 years. And I'm not really missing it. If you think I don't know anything about the world, the politics, etc., well, test me. I bet I will know as much as you, or maybe more, because I'm looking at different sources, and I'm looking for what I want to learn more about. So I'm not missing it. I'm not flipping channels, wasting my time. I try not to, sometimes it's hard, but I try not to also do browsing. I had a period of, several times in my life, of reading the news every day. There was a martial law in Poland. I wanted to know everything about it. There was a transformation. Around the elections, I also read a lot, more than I should. I'm guilty of that. But I try not to. I've never read newspapers in my life. Well, occasionally, you know, I was somewhere, I would look at it, but overall, I don't read that. So try that. I definitely advise it to you. I don't read newspapers. My former wife, she subscribed to a newspaper. And then in the morning, I was, you know, the sun was shining, the day was so beautiful. I would wake up, go to the kitchen, you know, have breakfast, and then she would read to me. Did you know they found in Shenley Park a body cut into 75 pieces? And, you know, she would spoil my day, spoil my morning. I don't need to know that, these kind of things. So I lived without it. And you can do it. Try it if you don't believe me. There's a quote, hard work is often the easy work you did not do at the proper time. That's exactly it, reinforcing this idea that if you are here, you never need to be there, almost never. Because here is where you are stressed, you essentially have to do something because it's important, it's urgent, you have to do it now. Maybe it will be at the expense of your sleep or at other things, you need to do it now. So. If you are here, you're going to be more relaxed, less stressed. Planning your time is important. I really think it's important. If I sometimes I joke that I give you an advice, a million zloty advice. If you send me a check for, or send me through Blik, you know, the amount of money that you think it was worth, this advice 10 years from now. I will not need to worry about my retirement. You know, I'll be a very rich man. Millions worth of advice, planning. Plan your time. Sit down and plan what you will do tomorrow, what you will do next week, this year. A few moments in your year, every day actually in the evening, plan. That usually is a very, very effective way of planning your time. Another thing that is good for people who are doing creative work, like you, you're scientists, plan for chunks of quality time. What do I mean by quality time? These are the best times of your day. Some people are very good in the morning. Some people like working late at night. So you have to listen to yourself. What is the best time for you? And then make sure that you don't schedule any silly appointments that time of the day. Now I'm kind of varying, but I used to have, for many years, I used to work very well in the morning. Sometimes I would even wake up, before even going to the bathroom to brush my teeth, I would pick up a paper and read it in bed. For an hour, you know, that was a good quality time for me. And then I would wake up, you know, brush my teeth, take shower, go to work. But that the time was important. So ask yourself what the best time for you is, and then don't schedule anything there, because you want to be rested, you want to be really at your best at that time for creative thinking. Another and try to make chunks of that. There was one of my members of my PhD committee. I showed you a picture of him in the very beginning, Baruch Fischhoff. Once he said to me the following: some people think that academics, professors, are smart, very smart, much smarter than people in the industry, executives, directors. But I don't think this is true, he said. They are both, they can be very smart people in both groups, but they are just working in a different mode. Professors wake up whenever they want, whenever they plan. Then, you know, they go to the university at noon. Sometimes they stay at home. They have some appointments, some teaching, and then they have chunks of time where they just spend on thinking. Executives in companies, they get to the office early in the morning, like 7:30, because they want to beat the secretary. They want to process the emails from the previous day. The secretary comes in, he brings some things to sign, some things to read. 9 o'clock, first appointment. The appointment is over. You can have maybe a cup of coffee, and then you run for another appointment at 10:30 at the client's office. Noon, lunch, business lunch, 2 o'clock, another appointment, another meeting. 5:30, 6 o'clock, you are half dead. You go home and only have enough power to move your thumb, pressing the channels in your TV, and then 10 o'clock you fall asleep. And you didn't have enough time to just sit down and think. I think this, he said this is the difference. I do believe him, I agree with him, that this is just a mode of operation. So advice for you is find long chunks of time that you can spend on thinking. Another trick in that the same line, along the same line, is make appointments with yourself. So put in the calendar even 4 to 6 p.m. I'm meeting with myself. Tell your secretary that you are busy. You have an appointment. With whom? With yourself. Right. So be uninterrupted. It's you. Along the same lines. It is really very important for people who are doing creative things. Planning, this is the million-dollar advice thing that I said. It's a good idea. This is a picture that I do show my master's students when I teach a seminar for master's students or bachelor's students. Try to plan. If this is the time when you have to defend your thesis or your dissertation, well, plan backwards. Here is where I need to start writing, only writing, nothing else, and then back. I need to have the experiments done here or start experimenting here, etc., etc. So plan backwards. Planning is really very important, very effective. People who plan achieve the goals. It's also not only in work, but it's also in politics, for example. People who have an agenda and are planning are winning. Bolsheviks in Russia, they were part of the popular movement to overthrow the Tsar. You know, the April Revolution in Russia. Bolsheviks didn't want that, they wanted more. They wanted to overthrow that provisional government, and they wanted power. They planned it, they knew it, all of them. It was a long-term plan. That's why they did the October Revolution. Fidel Castro, did you know that he was pretending to be a Christian, wearing a cross on his breast, and just being a good guy, a partisan, fighting with the terrible Batista regime? When he entered Havana with all the others, a popular revolution, he had a cross on his neck. But that was not his goal. He was planning for more. He was planning to get power. The same what happens today with the European Union. There is a plan realized by currently the people in power. You will see that as time flies, goes. There's a plan to create a federation with a majority vote. And it's not enough for them to have a union of independent nations. They are actually planning, and they've been planning for the last 80 years. Started with the Spinelli Manifesto, who was a communist, a Trotskyist in Italy.
He wrote a manifesto. There's a Spinelli group in the parliament, and they are slowly not telling you what they want, but they are actually, they want to create a super country at the expense of individual nation. There's a very good program on, that I listen to that actually still ongoing in Radio.net. I do listen to media, but very selectively. I have no doubt that this is a long-term plan, and there is a very good chance that they will succeed, just because they are planning long-term. And when you plan long-term, you know when you are where you are going. Very important. Then you make steps in that direction. And if you are in a group, of course, the whole group is planning, so it's usually very effective. If you plan your career, that's why it's so important. Remember from the career planning, you need to know where you are going, because then every step you make in that direction. The same principle, the same idea, planning. This is the $1 million advice. I'm joking about sending me a check, but if we meet 10 years from now or 20 years from now, I will love it to hear from you how planning more has changed your life, your careers. Knowing when to refuse is important. In the beginning, in the career, I mentioned that a few times in the context of other things, like leading a life, you need to know when to refuse. And you cannot refuse always. There are people who are like wells, you know. You throw into them, you do things for them, you know, you give them things, it's like a well. You throw into the well, you hear an echo, and that's it. You ask them, can you do something for me? They say, no, I'm busy, etc. You know, there are people like this. So don't be like that. Do things for people also, but do refuse less important things, because you want to do the most important things. In the beginning of your career, definitely there will be many things that are tempting. Like somebody will ask you, can you review a paper for me? Can you join the program committee of this conference? Can you join the... can you edit a special issue of a journal, etc.? A lot of things like this. We are tempted to say yes, 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 yes. You need to start at some point selecting. I want to do this, but I don't want to do that. That's not supporting my long-term goal. Just refuse that. But don't refuse everything, because then you will be like a well, you know. Whenever people ask you, you say no, but you do want to ask people to do service for you. But people will very quickly find out that you are a well, and they will also start refusing you. So be a good colleague, but know where to refuse, less important things. So choose the duties that you want to do, and routine tasks, you have colleagues, of course, distribute them among your colleagues and people. That will help you. That's a joke that I've seen in many languages. There are many people, you know, there are many. In English, they say there are many, many chiefs, but not enough Indians. You know, there's many bosses, but only one worker here. Right? All kind of managers. That's a natural tendency. People prefer to be managers than to be workers. But when you are a manager, when you are a leader, make sure that there are enough people to do the work and divide the work. You've seen this, I think. So one thing that makes your path to career efficient is asking for advice, not learning things, and asking advice. It's interesting because people love to give advice. Whenever somebody asks you for something, it's really an honor to be asked. So you try to give a good answer. Remember that people, when you ask others, they will also feel the same way. So it's really a nice situation, you know. If you see that somebody who is doing something well, ask, how did you do it? How do you do it? Ask for advice. A good friend of mine has written a book on this topic, titled Advices for Winners, where he makes a good case for asking. Here is one thing that he says. Suppose you know 1,000 things and somebody knows only 100 things. Among the 100 things, there are probably two or so things that you don't know. Everybody has something. Everybody has something interesting to tell. And it's a good idea to just talk and ask if you have things. We had a janitor
cleaning person in Pittsburgh, I remember. Since he was doing his job very well, I would ask him advice for how do you get when your sofa is dirty, how do you get that spot off? He told me that, but then I also learned that he is a college graduate, so he studied. He just didn't want to have any responsibilities. He wanted to be a very simple employee, a janitor. I also learned from him where to get used parts for European cars. That was a useful piece of advice. And overall, it was a very nice kind of, you know, relationship that I loved chatting with him. Do that because people know a lot. That will save you time. You've seen several of these slides. The longer you wait with something, the harder it is to make. The longer you wait with doing something, the more time it will take you. You get an email. You know, you process your emails, let's say, once a day or so, if you want to. Then, when it's fresh, do it right away, small things, because if you read it and think, okay, well, let me do it tomorrow. Tomorrow, you have to read it again, and you have to think again about this. So, when you do something, do it. Do it without waiting. Here's another rule that is useful in time management. They call it Parkinson's law. This is not the Parkinson from the Parkinson disease. He said, work expands so as to fill the time available for its completion. What does he mean by that? It means that if you have something to do, let's say you have a dissertation to write or a paper to write, if you decide that the deadline is, let's say, June 15, you decide to start working on it now until June 15, or you decide you are going to write it, let's say, starting June 1st to June 15, no matter how much time you will allocate to that task, you will fill that time. Writing a paper is important, so I would not advise you to do it at the last moment, but there are less important things. For example, I got this similar advice when I was preparing for teaching. When you are a young faculty, of course you have to do a lot of things. The most important things that you do is writing papers, research. Less important things are service, like reviewing, taking part in all kinds of committees in the university, and teaching. You have to teach. Every academic has to teach. If you want to spend if you want to prepare well for your classes, for your lectures, I can guarantee you, you can spend full time on preparation. Because as a young faculty, you don't have experience in teaching, and every lecture you will feel unhappy, you want to read more, prepare better, improve your slides. If you don't put a limit, time limit for that, you will spend the whole week preparing for teaching, and you will have no time for your research. The same now, when you are doctoral students, probably your classes, your courses are not very demanding, but if they are demanding, then I bet that if you decide to spend time on your courses, to prepare well for your courses, for your exams, for your projects, probably you will neglect your research. So what's a good way of dealing with that? Put a time limit. I got this advice very early, luckily, when I was right after my PhD, starting as a young faculty. So what I did is, I had lectures twice a week, let's say. I would say the whole day before my lecture, I spent on preparing my lecture. The whole day. But if I don't finish, well, tough. The students will not get what they paid for, right? I will not be the best teacher they deserve. Especially the first time I teach a course. But that gave me 2 full days of the week for preparation, maybe half days because there was a lecture also. So 3 days out of 7 for teaching, and then I had 2 days or 3 days left for research. It's a very good way of preparing yourself for organizing your time. Things that you have to do but are less important, put a time limit. Because no matter how much time you allocate, if I allocated 2 days per lecture, I would spend those 2 days easily. So put a time limit. And that's what the conclusion from this Parkinson's law. Especially things that are less important, put a time limit. I want to spend so much time, that's it. No more. Not important things, but the less important, definitely. So that's the advice I got. Putting a time limit for preparation. The next thing, so these are the things that I have learned about dealing with time. Of course, there are probably more things. You will get a lot of advice from Randy Pausch if you watch his lecture about classifying phone calls, you know, practical things. You can do that, although there are many small tricks. Today, when I get a phone call from an unknown number, and 80 or 90% of that are trying to sell me solar panels. What I do is, I don't pick up, and I call back immediately. And I screen that, because when I call back a telemarketer, the phone doesn't exist, or something. And that's over, right? And then if it's a genuine call, I call immediately back, I talk to the person. Simple, very simple trick, but saves me, I would say, a few minutes every day. Small thing. You will learn these small things as you go. The next thing that's related to time management is stress. How do you deal with stress? There's no doubt that you need to do something to deal with stress, because if you don't, then you will be stressed. And the reason why we need to deal with stress is that there are many reasons, actually. They link stress with many things. Not only, not being efficient, but also your physical health. They say about the influence of stress on your mental, but also on your physical health. They link stress to cancers, to many things. There's a concept, I don't have a slide on that, but I should have a slide. I will do that. There is a something that you can find in Wikipedia called Rosetto effect. You can find it in the Wikipedia, Rosetto effect. I think it's R-O-S-E-T-O. Rosetto is a village in a small town in eastern Pennsylvania in the U.S. They noticed that people in Rosetto live longer. Surprising, because the same range of mountains, Appalachian Mountains, and they live longer. So they studied them, what is happening. They studied their eating habits, their behavior, whether they exercise or not. They could not find anything. They ate hamburgers, barbecues, meats, fats, everything that other people are also eating. Were they exercising? Not really. Some of them were a little obese, regular people living in the United States. The only thing they found is that the people in Rosetto had a very good social structure. Many friendships, many organizations, church choir, hunting club, rosary club, all kinds of things that kept them together. They had very good social relationships. They called this Rosetto effect, essentially telling you that when you have a good social life that is not stressful, but you love other people, you are very friendly with them, you have friends who you can talk to, can give you mental support, that apparently makes our life longer, makes us healthier. So there are reasons that for which we should consider leading less stressful life. And there are many things that you can do here. There are two types of course, this is my joke, the two types of things. I told you why, right? Remember the Japanese guy? I told you that, right? Why I'm saying sometimes there are two types of something. Did I tell you that? I was riding my bicycle from the university to home,
And I was interested in, when I was a doctoral student, and I was interested in Japan. So when I saw a Japanese guy walking along the same way, I stopped my bicycle and I walked with him to chat, because we were going the same direction. Why did I know he was Japanese? Because his advisor was Herb Simon, I knew that, so I wanted to chat with him. So I kind of started talking with him, and I said, well, most of the Japanese people I know in Pittsburgh live in this big tall building at the intersection of Morwood and Center Avenue. And you live in Squirrel Hill. Squirrel Hill has small houses. And he said to me, yes, because there are two types of Japanese people. And if somebody took me a picture, you know, probably my ears were like that. I hope my jaw didn't, I hope my mouth wasn't open. I wanted to learn something new about Japan. And he said, there are two types of Japanese people. There are rich Japanese people and poor Japanese people. He has proven that Japanese do have a sense of humor. They're known for not having a sense of humor, but it was actually a good joke. He meant that people in the tall building are probably rich, and he was a doctoral student, not very rich. So whenever I can, I say things like that. There are two types of Polish people. And somebody generalizes something. Well, I said, you know, said, oh, Polish people are doing this or that. I said, well, there are two types of Polish people. Some are doing this, some are doing something different. And everything, I do that. So stress, there are two types of stress. It's actually bordering on something that we probably know. There is this positive stress that makes us feel that we live, right? Because if there is no pressure at all, then we feel like we are not alive, yes? So we need a little bit of motivation. That's the positive stress. Stress, English, pressure, right? Negative is stress that paralyzes us. There are different causes of that stress. Negative stress appears when your girlfriend, boyfriend is leaving you, right? Saying goodbye. Or your child is sick, your parent is sick. You know, you cannot do anything about this. You kind of feel very upset. Positive stress is when your friend in your lab has published a paper, right? And you want that too, right? That can be motivating. It's like a spice. You need a little bit of that to make you feel alive. You want to feel that you are alive. And we want to talk about the negative one, the one that paralyzes us, because this is what we want to deal with. A simple recipe. When I first started spending months in Poland after many years, that was around the year 2006, 2007, I think, I was listening to a Polish radio program One, and I thought, boy, the Polish people have become so addicted to medicine. You know, it's like, it looks like they are taking medicine for everything, because all the advertisements were with medicine, all kinds of things. Later I thought, well, maybe because program one is for older people, and they know advertisers that older people are they like medicine. In any case, if you turn on the radio, you will hear a lot of things that help you with stress. Recently, ashwagandha. At that time, I think Relana Forte. Now it's Valerian Marx, Positivum, and you know, all kinds of things. But this is not for you, absolutely. There's one anecdote that I remember. My high school teacher, I still have contact with her. I still call her regularly and meet her. She's a widow and has no children, so she really needs those phone calls and talking. So one day we were at an excursion, and she entered our room without knocking for too long, and she felt the smell of alcohol. Of course, you know, we were in high school, but we were... You know that, you've gone through that. And she said nothing, she has withdrawn, but then during the, when we were, she had this 1 hour of, once a week, godzina wychowawcza, is, you know, we talk about different things. She said, well, I can understand people in their 40s, 50s, or 60s, they need a little bit of alcohol to feel good. But you, at the age of, whatever, 16 or 18, you should be having good time without alcohol. So I remember that, telling you that this is not for you. You are too young to leave it to the pharmaceutical industry. Don't do that. You need to learn to deal with stress yourself. Maybe when you are 40, 50 or 60 and you realize you cannot handle it on your own. I'm still not that old, by the way. I don't do anything of that. So there is no doubt that in your future profession, which is a scientist, you will need some stress management technique, because the amount of work, different things, the pressures, things that they require, expect from you, they will be creating a lot of opportunities for stress. So you need to somehow deal with that. One way of dealing with this is setting the working hours. When I was a young person, even after my doctorate, when I was a young faculty, I thought that I can work all the time. I had several times over the period of maybe 10 years, I had students from the Netherlands, because I had a friend in the Netherlands who recommended me those students. They came to do their master's thesis there, sometimes doctorates also. What I noticed is that they worked, usually they came in the morning, 8 o'clock to the lab. They worked until 6 or 7 and they went home. They came on Saturday, but in the evenings and Sundays they were just having fun. They were also in a strange country, US, they wanted to see things, they wanted to have beer with people, go to parties. And I realized that what they were doing is actually not, it makes actually a lot of sense. It's not, I first thought that this is like, you are like a bureaucrat, 5 o'clock you go home. No, but they were just taking good care of their mental health. If you have family, children, make sure that you adjust your working times to your family. You need to be home. You need to have your children have dinner with you and do things also. Maybe when they go to sleep, you do a little bit more work. The same with your spouse. You need to be around. So having fixed hours, or more or less fixed, is not as bad as it sounds. If you use your time efficiently, you can probably do a lot of work in those hours. What fits your busy schedule better? Exercising 1 hour a day or being dead 24 hours a day? You need to find time for your body, for your health. In a healthy body, there is the spirit is healthy. That's the Latin. Mens sana corpore sano, right? You know that. It's a good idea to move, to exercise. Definitely, highly recommended. So, find something that makes you really tired physically. I have noticed, it was still when I was a master's student in Poland, 1970s, I started doing yoga and then martial arts. I practiced karate. Just for exercise, really. So, when I was so tired, my muscles were aching, I noticed that I was so efficient in my thinking. Incredible, I was just so calmed down. All the things were calm. I was able to think very, very well. Try it if you don't know this feeling. Try something that makes you move, that makes you tired. Some sports, yoga. Yoga is really good. I practiced yoga just for maybe a year as a student in Poland. I still remembered things. When I was when I had very important things in my life, like prepared for an important interview, I would do some relaxation techniques. I still remember them, the relaxing my body. Incredible, I still could do that. Fishing, gardening, whatever. I do fishing, by the way. I have a canoe, but I do active fishing, not waiting for the thing. I go after the all kinds of predators recently all over the world, even fishing. Dancing. I was a typical man in Poland. Who of the gentlemen likes dancing, we have 3, 4, 5. 1 out of 5, 20%. Of the ladies, of the 6 actually, of the ladies who likes dancing, I think it's bigger, higher percentage. And probably the ladies who did not raise their hands are hesitating today. I learned dancing when I was 50. My wife has encouraged me to dance. I still tell her that I do it for her, but actually I like it. It's a very interesting, very relaxing exercise, and it gives so much joy to my wife, by the way. Sometimes when the music is right on the radio, we just dance a little bit. Good thing to do, if you haven't tried it, if I knew how much ladies like dancing, I would have learned when I was 15 and not 50. It was definitely, would be a good idea. Nature is phenomenal. Because somehow, you know, you realize, I'm going to quote, I went once to a retreat, there was a Franciscan monk who was kind of on the fringe, you know, on the border. He was still a good Catholic, but not in the center, kind of, you know, experimenting. So he said it was a retreat for men. He said that it's good for men, but I think it's good for everybody, to realize that we are really just miserable little shits. That's what he said. That we are so small and insignificant in the big picture of the world. Nature is wonderful, because when you look at some big mountains and you realize that you are just a small small being, it's a good feeling that is good to know. Nature is a good place to just relax. I mentioned it already, the working hours. It's not as best as it seems. As if you use your time efficiently, you can do your work and then you can regenerate and you can do important things like spending time with your family. Stressful situations. You can avoid them if you look at this table. Stress is right here. There are things that you have to do, and they are urgent. They are important and urgent. You cannot say, I'm not doing that. When you are taken over by these things, you have very little freedom, and that is where you experience stress mostly. So one way of responding to that is being as much as you can in this region, and then that will reduce the amount of time that you are there. Solve problems early. That is something that I believe that in Polish culture, I think we are not doing it completely right. Why do I think so? Because it was revealing to me when I was a young man in the Netherlands. Dutch are, sometimes they are very direct to the point of being impolite or painful. You call a friend and say, would you like to go to the movies with me? And he says, no, I'm reading an interesting book now. We don't say that in Polish, right? In Poland. You say, well, I cannot do it now because there is a plumber fixing something in my house. I cannot leave. You know, you invent something, right? So they are very direct. And one thing I noticed is if you say something to them or if you do something that is not completely right, they have the tendency to set you straight. There are good and bad things about this. I think that the society overall is a little bit repressive, much less repressive than Polish society. Polish society gives you much more freedom, I think, kind of social interactions. But the nice thing about the attitude of the Dutch is that they are solving problems early. For example, I spoke to my advisor and I tell you, well, you have to see that. And he says, do I have to? You know, they kind of show you their teeth, their nails to kind of, you know, set you straight, keep the distance a little. And especially when you do something they don't like, they will tell you that. So one lesson I think that I have learned, and I definitely advise you that, is if you solve problems early, if you set things straight right away,
you will avoid problems in the future. Suppose you have an office mate who is doing things like, I don't know, putting his or her legs on your desk. You know, when you look at that, you look at them, look at their leg, they will get the message, right? And they will stop doing this. If they don't stop doing this, well, tell them, would you please not put your legs on my desk? Anyway, solve it early. If you solve it early, you will essentially avoid problems in the future. Did you notice, by the way, that I say it, this is a little sexist, but I hope it's not too sexist. Did you notice that there are some ladies around whom you cannot say bad words, you cannot curse, and there are ladies around whom you can curse, no problem. How did those ladies do it, that they don't allow cursing? I guess the first time somebody tried it, the lady looks or says something, and you know that you don't curse in her presence. The same with long-term relationships. If you, when I was in the Netherlands, in 1980s in the Netherlands, it was like 1960s in the United States, the revolution, you know, of moral, sexual revolution, feminists, I saw them demonstrating in the streets, etc. All these things that are going through Poland, I've seen them 40 years ago. So there was a slogan, it begins, it was really in English, they were in posters, it begins with your arms, it begins when you sink in his arms, it ends with your arms in his sink. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you know, you have a husband, and then it begins beautifully, you kind of feel nice, but then, you know, you end up doing the dishes for him. I don't believe it's a nice way of setting things. It's putting unnecessarily any animosity between sexes, which is, I think, completely unnecessary. But there's one thing in that I thought of. The lady who indeed ends up with her arms in the sink, what was she doing the first time when the husband said, well, you do the dishes? Well, she should have said, well, why don't we do that together? Or, I will do it today, you do it tomorrow. Right? I have my career too. So this is exactly solving the problems early. Don't wait until you realize that your husband is forcing you to do the dishes, to do the cooking, stay at home, taking care of the children. Don't wait for that. Just, you know, as you go, solve the problems early. That's the recipe. It's good for the relationship because you kind of, you know, you settle the positions in any relationship, husband, wife, friend, office mate. Solve the problems early. That's really avoiding problems later. They say it in every language, really. I don't know if it's in every language, but we have it in Polish, Mądry Polak po szkodzie. The Dutch one is calf is, I think it's in also in English, young cow, when the calf drowns, they dump the water hole, right? So you start worrying when it's too late. There's another one in English, an ounce of prevention is better than a pound of a cure. Polish one is lepiej zapobiegać niż leczyć. Dutch is exactly the same as this. We have one person in your culture. Are there similar things, similar sayings?
No?
Well, cultures are different, you know, that's what makes us interesting. But do things early. Solve problems early. That prevents stress and saves you time. So recognize potential problems. Like you see a dishonest boss, you see that there are some things happening that should be not happening. Well, say it to them, or find another place. You know, recognize it early, because if you end up being there when the police are entering and making arrests, it's too late, right? Just recognize it early and don't get there. If you don't fit, just leave if you don't think it's a company for you. You've seen this slide. If you love what you do, it will be less stressful because you love it. You just like it. Why is this cut? I don't know. Maybe it's moved. As far as foundation, the stress, I think it's important. I mentioned this idea. You've seen this slide. There is this, remember in Pantadeusz, this Polish, one of the most famous books, there is this figure of Maciek zwany Kurkiem na Kościele. He was they were joking about him, that he was changing his opinion depending on which way the wind was blowing, right? You know people like that too, some politicians who are changing parties and, always following there were even Polish politicians who were saying, we want to flow in the mainstream. And others were joking that, extremists were also flowing in the mainstream too, right? Some people are just like being in the mainstream. But what you want is you want to have good foundations. When you have good foundations, you know how to behave. Good foundations, I was telling you about this movie, Karate Kid. Good foundations in martial arts is standing well on the ground. Legs apart, very stable position. If somebody pushes you, you avoid it. You can do a lot. Good position, foundations. That the same thing is in mental sense. When you have good foundations, you have a moral skeleton, moral foundations. Then whatever changes in the world around you, you know what to do. Because you know how you should behave. Things that your parents were teaching you, your church, your whatever. You know what to do. If I were to, let me tell you the thing that I heard in a self-help tape. That was many, many years ago, before my doctorate. I listened to a guy who, this is the first time I heard it, but it's a good thing. I found pictures later, apparently many people use it. They tell the following story. The guy has a jar, glass jar, and he takes a bag of stones. He takes a bag of big stones, pours them into the jar, to the full. He asks, is the jar full? Everybody says, yeah, it's full. Then he pulls out another bag of smaller stones. And it turns out that he can fit the whole bag of smaller stones in between the big stones. Is the jar full now? Yes, it's full now. Then he pulls out even smaller stones or sand and pours sand. Is the jar full now? No, now it's completely full. Then he gets a jar of water and pours water in it until it's full. And he can do it. If you start that exercise with water or sand, you will notice that you will not fit the big stones. It's a metaphor. If you want to fit more things in your life, if you want to organize your time better and be less stressed, start with big stones. Put in your head, in your whatever you are doing, the important things first. The foundations, again. If you do that, then the small things, small stones, sand, water, they will fit. Don't worry about them. They will fit in between. But the big stones are in there, and they are making sure that what you are doing, you are doing the important things. I think it is a good idea to have some kind of guiding light to, as I said, the foundation, to know, because that tells you what to do when you have a difficult situation. And it doesn't really matter that much what it is. You are brought up in some family with system of values. Think about them. Sometimes you reject them, but very often there are wise things that your parents or grandparents were telling you. These are the foundations. One thing, for example, I noticed is that people are much more important than things and the professional success. And that belongs to really a system of value, system of values. If I were to,
invest in my health. Suppose I was atheist, which I'm not. I'm a religious person. But suppose I was an atheist. If I were doing just, you know, cold calculations, I probably might choose a religion just to help me with my stress, you know, to help me with my organizing my life. It's a good investment in your just mental health and stress.
If you again, there are many religions in the world. You can pick, or you can stay in the one where you were brought up. That's the easiest thing to do. That was also already mentioned by Randy Pausch. The most important things in life. Remember, he was telling about this whole talk is for my children. Family and children are really the most important. Maybe at the end I can play this piece of the movie if I have the time. If not, then try to find it on YouTube. This is a funny movie. It's a comedy called Idiocracy. That's the title of the movie. It's not maybe terribly well made, but the idea is wonderful. It's the world in 2500. Apparently, you know, we think about the future that's getting better and better. People are smarter, more educated. But the argument in the movie is that that the world is dumbing down. People are getting more and more stupid because intelligent people have fewer children. And people who are not well educated are not yet succeeding. They are having fewer children. And then it ends up that we become dumber. But this is an intelligent couple with high IQ, and they talk about having children. No, not now. It's too, with the economical situation the way it is now, no, it doesn't make any sense to have children, etc. What I want to say with this slide is don't forget, you are working on your careers now. It's your PhD studies, but don't forget about your personal life. If you want to start a family, don't postpone it. You can do it, really. I had my first child before my PhD studies, the second in the middle, the third was when around the time I finished my doctoral studies. And then the fourth one, I have four sons. You can do it, really. It's possible. It's a matter of organizing your life, your time. There are important things, and don't put them on the side. You want to create a family because it's more important than career. So don't forget about that. We talked about mission statements. I think it's... I've never done it. I tried it, but my wife wasn't very open for it. But it's a good idea to actually sit down and think, what am I doing? What we are doing here as a family? Or my personal life? What do I want in life? Another thing that, and I mentioned that in the context of being a boss, having a lab, is how to help other people. That's also an important thing, and I think you've seen some of the slides for sure. Friendships. We are social beings. It's absolutely that people need other people. You can see it when you look at animals, our younger brothers, beings. When you look at dogs, do you know what the most frequent causes of death of dogs are? Dogs are incredibly social. They really need a group. The two causes of death are heart diseases, because they don't exercise enough. When they live in the cities, they stay at home the whole day. They just go walking twice a day, once a day or twice a day. Heart disease is the most common. And then mental diseases. Mental diseases because they often stay at home the whole day alone. And they are very social. They really need other dogs to play with. So we are also, as humans, we are also very social. We need other people. That reduces our stress. It's a good idea to be a good colleague at work, a team member, be liked and be a colleague. You need friends, and friends need you. So it's wise to have friends and also help them. People around you, help them, support them. There was one argument I remember when I was still a young man, father of one of my friends, when I
was a student in Poland, he said, he was a scientist, and he said, well, some people talk about Polish hell, where devils don't need to keep guard of the people getting out of the big cauldrons, because other people are pulling down those who want to get up. He says, I like pulling other people up, because by definition, I'm higher than they are, so I'm pulling them, but also I'm helping them. Very interesting thing to say. I think it's true.
If you help your friends, your people around you, you pull them up, you are higher than they are, and they will also help you. They will pull you up. If you notice that they are pulling you down, leave them, because they are the type of the whales. You throw things in them, the only thing you get is an echo. Not even thank you. So help your friends. On the other hand, that's a cultural thing, has historical reasons. In Poland, we tend to have buddies, not just colleagues and friends. We tend to have buddies for whom we do sometimes things that are legal within the bounds of reason, ethical within the bounds of reason. Koleśowanie. Don't do that. It's not a very wise idea. Have colleagues and friends, but not koleśe, because that's not a good idea. The last thing, brown nosing in English means vaseliniarstwo. It's just, trying to be extra nice, doing, things that don't look good. Brown nosing is a bad idea, really bad idea. It means that people are distinguishing between people who are higher than them. They are brown nosing them. They are doing good things for them, and they are treating their colleagues different. You are watching, I come to you and say, oh, I like you and this and here is this and that. I try to be very nice because he's my boss. What do you think? What the other colleagues think? But he's brown nosing. What a terrible thing to do, yes? So it's a bad idea around your colleagues to do that, right? If you are a good boss, if he's a good boss, he looks at me and thinks, well, I have to watch out this guy, right? Because I don't like his behavior, he wants something from me, right? So don't do that, it's a really bad idea. Not many people do that, but sometimes you see people who are doing this, opening the doors for the big professors, etc. My reaction is immediately, I have to watch out that person. Yes? So don't do that. And that also destroys your relationships with other colleagues. And that is also leading to stress, because when you come to your office, people are looking, avoiding you or not drinking coffee with you because they don't like you. Healthy environment. You've seen this slide. It's a good idea that helps other people. Building a healthy environment for them. You never know when they will help you, when out of thankfulness, just out of thankfulness. Even if they don't, you've done a good thing, which will make you feel better. You've seen this one, team building, good idea, makes the environment nicer. You've seen this slide, that also is really helpful. Makes the whole group of people, the atmosphere is better. That reduces the stress also. It's not a nice environment where people don't like each other. So try to make your environment nice. You've seen this one, keep your relationships. Concluding remarks. Have a calendar. In terms of managing your time, but always remember what is important. Also look at your calendar. Before you go to sleep, look at what you are doing the next day. Don't just go to sleep without knowing what you are going to do next day. And it's a good idea to look at the whole week on Sunday night, what you are going to do, and keep in touch with your calendar. Make appointments with yourself. So schedule those top times for yourself. For thinking, for doing creative work. Know when to refuse, ask for advice. Try to like what you're doing, or do what you like, actually, that's better. You like something, for sure, you have preferences, try to do what you like. And then simple motivators that motivate you, like sometimes it works. I'm not going to watch, to go to the movies until I finish that paper. Sorry, that's it. I'm finishing that paper, then the pleasures. Stress is an important part of life. It motivates us. It makes us feel that we are alive. But certain types of stress are not pleasant, unhealthy, and harmful to us. Best to organize your life in such a way that you avoid that. You avoid the people, the environments that make you not feel well. You just avoid that. But if you cannot avoid that, then you have to learn to live with it. You have to form the surroundings so that they become less stressful. The thing that I wanted to show you, unfortunately, that thing will work with the voice. We have 5 minutes. It would be nice to watch that part of that movie, Idiocracy. Very fast, the internet. I should change the maybe I will manage to get HDMI to work. Because then we'll have the voice. Let's see if HDMI. Looks like there is a problem, so, well, without voice than it's Idiocracy. We have Idiocracy. Okay, let's see. So maybe I should go back to this. Can you see that still? Okay, we have it. Unfortunately, the sound is going to be, but maybe there is going to be subtitling. Let's see, is this... Sorry. Unfortunately, I don't know.
Species. Having kids is
Jacek.
The movie is, you know, you can watch it. It's okay, but not terrific. But the idea is great that you saw in the beginning of the movie. 7:10, my time is up, so thank you. If anybody came later, please see me. I'll set you as present. Thank you, and see you next week.